Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. The NHL has landed, and two new team names have been submitted for trademark. Plus, SLC schools are juggling a lot of big ideas and big problems this week, from bathrooms to smartphones and book bans. Here's what you need to know, whether you're a grandma to four or just a dog parent. Executive producer Emily Means is here for our end-of-week news roundup. It's Friday, April 26th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Good morning, Emily Means. The NHL has landed in Salt Lake City.
Let's go, Utah. And that's all we can say because they don't have a name yet.
No, they don't. All I can say is, boy, do they look like hockey players. Man,
amen.
Those guys walking off that plane, I was like, the hair, the Swedish lookingness of it all. Lauri Markkanen is probably in good company.
Do you know what?
Fellow Scandinavians now.
I don't know. I expected them to be taller, too. But, like, I saw a photo of them standing next to Lauri Markkanen, who is huge. He's, like, 7'3" or something like that. Star Jazz player, if y'all don't know. And they were short. They were short in comparison. Yeah. For some reason, I expected them all to be, I don't know, 7 feet tall.
No, hockey players are kind of like, they're like stout and strapping, I feel
like. They got to be low to the ground.
Yeah, I mean, you can skate faster probably, right? And like you have more agility. I do want to know what they gave out. I didn't go down to the Delta Center for this event, though what, 12,000 people did?
Uh-huh.
Which is...
Delta Center was full. And I think they were turning people away.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. But they said in the invite, it was like, we're going to be giving stuff away. And I'm like, well, I love a giveaway, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, but I want to know what they gave away. Because if it was merch, what did it say? They don't have a name. Did it just say Utah hockey? Or did it say like... just welcome? Were they giving away welcome mats? Like
Utah
luggage tags?
Insert name here? I don't know.
Yeah, it's like the like an activation at the gateway. Like you have to write in chalk like what name you think it should be.
Yes, yes.
We should say what's been submitted so far, which is that we know the name is going to start with Utah. Mm-hmm. So we've got Blizzard, Venom, Fury, Hockey Club, Yetis, Outlaws. I'm kind of into Outlaws. And then the two newest additions to the laundry list of names that have been submitted for trademarking are the Utah Mammoth and the Utah Ice.
Allie, can I give you my honest opinion on these?
Yeah.
They're all so generic. I really, like, this hockey team could be anywhere. Mm-hmm. I really think we need to go as local as possible. I still think Sea Monkeys would be great.
Yeah.
You know, we just need the Cutthroats. I think I've seen some people suggest that would be great.
What about the brine?
The brine.
The Utah brine.
Yes. The brine flies.
I kind of just think brine. And then the logo is like Nickelodeon slime from the 90s. Like it's just like green algae.
The pond scum.
What's clear is that hockey's going to do well here. And that's no surprise. I mean, like, this feels like a town that's ripe for a hockey team. I think these guys will thrive. I'm excited for them. Like, it seems like they've had terrible management for years. They've been seeking stability. They're going to get it. So congrats all around on that front. Mm-hmm. I say that because there was a tweet this week that might be breaking news to you, Emily. It was news to me. From the Montreal Expos, which is basically an inactive slash defunct Major League Baseball franchise.
Okay.
9 p.m. on April 18th, FYI, we are also an inactive franchise, ready and willing to be reactivated.
No! Stop.
Now, they did not tag the Millers, but the comments are like, go with the Coyotes. Go to Salt Lake. Like, so, I mean, oh, could we have the Utah Expos? I am not into baseball. I am so curious how baseball will do in Salt Lake if they land a baseball team and that gets added onto the sort of sports pile-on that we're all underneath right now. But I do think Expos is a great name, and it's so baseball-y.
Well, I was thinking it's very, you know, like Mountain America Expo Center, you know? Like, we hold a lot of conferences here. So it's very fitting.
Yeah. Our hockey team should be the Utah Salters. And our baseball team should be the Expos. And then we could have the Mavericks, the something Mavericks. Let's get that.
Well, you know, that already exists, so.
True.
The Living Traditions Festival is back in downtown Salt Lake City, May 17th through 19th, and this is when I come alive. It is so easy to sell me on 3 days of Washington Square and Library Square converting to a global food court, and this festival has truly been one of my favorites for years now. Living Traditions convenes the diversity of artistic traditions, food heritage, music, and art from the many cultures that have made Utah their home. You can expect everything from live music and dance to hands-on workshops, a little shopping, Sundance film screenings, and Bohemian Brewery. There is something for the whole family, and it's free entry. Come celebrate all of the rich cultures that make up our community. Find more information on the festival and view the full program guide at livingtraditionsfestival.com or on Instagram and Facebook at SLC Living Trad. We talk a lot on this show about our city's crown jewels. What are the institutions that open doors in our community and regulate its pulse? I choose Salt Lake Community College, and it is a home for incredibly focused Salt Lakers. Nearly 80% of their students work while going to school, many full-time jobs. If I could do college all over again, I would not be 33 and sitting on these damn student loans. And slick students aren't. 80% graduate with little to no student loan debt or save thousands knocking out credits before transferring to a four-year institution. Every day, Salt Lake Community College is transforming lives and communities through education. If you want to learn something new, refine a trade, or pursue a higher degree for the first time, explore your options at slcc.edu. Study alongside hard workers, save precious money, and be one in a class of 19, not 100.
Okay, let's move into some other news. We have to talk about the Salt Lake City School District. Now, full disclosure, neither you nor I are parents. We don't get regular communication from SLC schools. We're not pulling flyers out of backpacks every day to try and get the scoop. We're not in parental group chats. But there are some big issues being tackled by the district right now that, frankly, impact all of us, because what happens in our schools is going to happen in our future, right?
Right.
That's kind of the theory.
And these are our neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. Like, surely you know a family with children in the Salt Lake City School District, right?
Right. And we fund these schools. So I like to know what's going on with my taxpayer dollars.
That's fair.
Let's start with bathrooms. The anti-transgender bathroom ban that was passed by the Utah legislature earlier this year takes effect May 1st. What you need to know about that law is that it means bathrooms and locker rooms in publicly funded places are now basically being policed, in that you have to use the bathroom or locker room that aligns with the sex you were assigned at birth. Mm-hmm. In publicly funded places. So not just schools, but schools are going to be ground zero here.
Right.
And it's a misdemeanor if you use the quote unquote wrong, according to the legislature, bathroom. Now, they've said it's only a misdemeanor if you cause alarm, not if you just wander in there like on accident or whatever. What does it mean to cause alarm? give me a break. It's a misdemeanor, right?
Like, again, if one person with the in there, vagary.
If one person in the bathroom says you made them feel uncomfortable by being in there and they decide to police your gender, well, then that's a misdemeanor.
Allie, the crazy thing about this, you mentioned it goes into effect on May 1st.
Yeah.
Children are still in school on May 1st in the Salt Lake City School District, which is why the district was, you know, trying to get everybody on the same page about this law. They were looking to present to students, you know, what the law does and what the rules are. And if your sex is designated as this, you need to go to this bathroom. And parents were upset about this because this presentation didn't acknowledge trans and non-binary students. The district pumped the brakes. They say it's because of a lack of clarity in the law and not because parents were pushing back. But they really don't have a lot of time to pump the brakes here.
No. And I mean, the legislature requires school districts to notify students of this policy. To your point about May 1st, I feel like it's just like one of a million ways that the legislature has proven itself not thoughtful in this kind of policymaking, like proof that this really is a messaging bill. Why you wouldn't implement something like this in the fall, at least give the district the summer to work out kinks, create a presentation, work with parents, have workshops, like to do it right before basically the end of the school year, right? Like the kids are out at the end of May, the last month of chaos when teachers are exhausted, trying to plan finals, you know, get kids out the door. Anyway, Axios had a slide in their write-up about this presentation from the original presentation, which now is like you said, paused, not going forward. But it was this slide from the presentation that was going to be shown to students as young as elementary school. And it had this like graphic of the famous like men's bathroom, women's bathroom signs, right? And they're like, they're crossing their legs, both the people, and they have their hands down. Like, right. And it's basically the slide is telling kids like not to hold it.
Yeah.
That they need to figure out how to go to the bathroom, even if it's been further complicated for them, or they're going to, basically the subtext is, even if you're going to have to go to a bathroom that just doesn't feel right for you or comfortable, don't hold it, make a plan to go. And that is so heartbreaking. So heartbreaking.
Well, the school district is really in a tough position here because, you know, obviously their number one priority is making sure kids feel safe in their classrooms. And, you know, part of this now is they're going to have to make plans with like individual students and their families.
Yeah.
And I think it just is a waste of time for everyone. Totally. And yes, to your point, like this keeps proving itself to be a messaging bill because the implementation is difficult. The district has said they have been given no guidance on how to implement this. The state school board says they haven't been given any instructions. The lawmaker who sponsored this bill, Representative Kara Berkland, says it's all up to the districts and like how they best see fit. Why even make this a thing if you didn't have a plan for how the districts were going to have to make this a thing? And I don't know, Allie. It's a tough position for the schools and for the parents and for the students especially to have to now figure out how this works for them.
It's humiliating for everyone involved, including the legislators that wrote this bill. And maybe right now they can't see that they're humiliating themselves, but I think eventually they will. And history will remember them as humiliating themselves in this way. Salt Lake City School District has its own gender inclusion policy as well, so I imagine that's really clashing with the state's approach. We'll see what they decide to do here, but it's a mess.
What a mess.
Okay. Another thing the district is sitting with this week and for the past few months is what to do about smartphones.
Ooh!
Which feels like, I don't know, that feels like a question that was absolutely written by not the kids.
Yeah, it's very Governor Spencer Cox coded.
Like, this whole, like, every issue that we're going to discuss related to the school district in this episode is, like, absolutely not coming from the kids. Like, none of these are things that the kids are like, hey, this is a crisis, can you fix this? In fact, the one thing the kids have been like, this is a crisis, can you fix this? We've done absolutely nothing about, and that's guns in school. Like, uh-huh. You have to laugh because you're just like, oh my God, okay, solutions, yeah. Looking for problems. Earlier this year, Governor Cox, who has really been on one lately about telling us how we should act, asked schools to remove cell phones during class time. He really likes the policy at a junior high school in Granite, which has banned cell phones entirely. He likes the policy at a high school in Delta, Utah, a rural city in Utah. He likes their policy of, like, basically just removing phones during class time.
Yeah.
And so Salt Lake City School District now is like, okay, so what are we going to do? Because
right.
Our current policy isn't strict. It's leaving it up to the schools and the teachers.
And survey says, according to the Salt Lake City School District, students are against a phone ban. No yeah. surprise there. Parents were okay with it, but worried about, like, what would happen if they needed to contact their kid in case of an emergency. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there are plenty of emergencies that happen in schools nowadays with the number of school shootings we've seen, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Allie, this is one of those things where back in my day and back in your day, we probably didn't even have to think about this. I don't know about you. I didn't get I didn't get any sort of phone until I turned 16. And it was certainly not a smartphone because they didn't have that technology back then. But
okay. I had a phone in fifth grade and I had a smartphone. Well, as smart as they got by, like, middle school. I had the Sidekick.
Really?
Remember Paris Hilton had the Sidekick where you would like flip it on the right and it would swivel open to reveal a keyboard and it made this sound.
Yeah. What are you, like a Wall Street exec or something? Or?
But you're right. We were kind of just riding with it. Like,
right.
I remember teachers being like, put your phone away. And I was like, okay, it's indisputable because you're God to me right now in this room.
Yeah, exactly. And I will follow all of the rules to a T because that's the kind of person I am. But
I mean, Emily, you and I both give pleasure to have in class, which is why we're probably ill-equipped to have this conversation.
You're right. But anyway, what the point I was trying to make is the world was a little different back when we were in school. But there was a really good point made by Salt Lake City School Board member Nate Salazar that, you know, like from the governor, we're getting this messaging that kids need to be off their phones. They need to be off social media. At the same time, the state funded an app to give people a resource if they feel unsafe, the Safe UT app. And, you know, kids can use it if they're having like a mental health crisis and stuff like that. So it's why give us this messaging that phones are bad when you've also given us tools that we can only use on our phones, you know?
Yeah. I also have to wonder if just sending this survey out and implying that there could be a policy change created some panic for parents mm-hmm. and students. More than 4,000 parents took this survey and more than 5,000 students. Like, whatever's true, they engaged. And I thought it was interesting what the kids said they do on their phone during class, because I think we have this perception that it's like they're literally like on FaceTime, not listening mm-hmm. to the teacher. And to be fair to everyone involved here, we have all been on the other side of that. We have all in this modern era felt the frustration of trying to explain something to someone who is very much not listening to you because yes. they are on their phone. Like, full stop. That is a real frustration. But what students said, and I don't know, maybe they were like, I'm going to lie on this survey because I don't want them to take my phone. I believe them. Was what they do with their phones, the majority of the responses during class are listen to music, which makes sense to me if the teacher's like, all right, do this work or whatever. You know, they plug in, put on a song, jam out, and use it to help with classwork, whether mm-hmm. that's like translating something or whatever else,
right.
or use it to look up info. Now, I know if I were in school now, I'd be using my phone as my calculator. Mm-hmm. I'd be using Google Translate in Spanish class instead of, you know, or like, and I think also like the way that we use our phones to supplement anything we're doing with more information, I notice when I don't have my phone, that's the thing I miss the most. Is like if I'm watching a movie and I can't look up who that one guy is.
Or like, I know this feeling.
You know this feeling, right? Or like you're at a jazz game and you're like trying to like, you're like, how tall is number 17 on this other team? Like, I gotta look this up. Like, it's just that constant. And it's because we have access to the information. It's addicting. But like, I'm not surprised that that's what the kids are doing. If my teacher was lecturing about something historical and I could just look up a photo of the person or whatever, I absolutely would.
Yeah. I mean, it's supplementary information, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how can we find a way to use these phones for the better in our classrooms? You know, if we have these tools available, then maybe we can use that to our advantage. Especially as we look to limit books in schools.
Yeah.
Even more.
All right. You brought up book bans, and that's the last thing we're going to hit here.
Yeah.
Can you give us the skinny here?
God, I can try. Okay. Good reporting from Utah News Dispatch here. So there is a new law expanding what we're going to refer to as book banning in schools, and it takes effect July 1st. Previously, there was a law targeting sensitive materials in books in schools, and there was like a local process for how to deal with that. Like if a parent complains about, you know, some sort of what they believe to be pornographic material in a book, then a local committee will take a look at that book and determine whether there's any merit to that complaint. Mm-hmm. Now there is this law taking effect that if at least three districts have determined a book is objectively indecent, then it can be banned statewide.
Oh. Objectively Indecent would be a song title from the musical 1776. Like, sit down, John. You're being objectively indecent.
It feels like a little Fallout Boy, like, objectively indecent, parentheses, my school doesn't want me to read Maya Angelou.
I'm glad you brought up Maya Angelou because here's the trend. These books that are being banned, if you scroll the list, they are more often than not authors of color. Sherman Alexie, Maya Angelou. They are often queer stories, coming out stories, or they're stories about race. They are often stories that touch on consent via storytelling around sexual incidents, maybe sexual assault. Like, and so we can't talk about what's being deemed objectively sensitive material or pornographic or indecent without addressing what's being deemed, right?
Yeah.
And like, those are the trend lines. So I think, I mean, you bring this up, Emily, a lot when we talk about homelessness, this idea of like how we should always ask ourselves if we're unsafe or uncomfortable. Like, in this moment, are you unsafe or are you uncomfortable? And that feels really similar to what we should be maybe asking ourselves here. Like, is it indecent or does it challenge you? Mm. Like, is it indecent or are you uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like legislators in particular, and maybe some parents here, have just gotten too good and it's been made too easy for them to scrap everything that makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you look at the guy who makes this decision for us, right? The sponsor of these sensitive materials bills is a man named Ken Ivory. He's a Republican representative from, I believe, West Jordan or South Jordan, Salt Lake County.
Mm-hmm.
He's white. And what Ken Ivory thinks is indecent is surely not the same as what I think is indecent or, you know, a queer family in Salt Lake City thinks is indecent, right?
And it feels like it's coming from the same people who seem really pressed about cancel culture. And that's where I'm just like, wow, like, it's so weird how you want us to be comfortable with nuance in every other aspect of life, unless we're talking about race, gender, or sexual encounters. And then, like, all of a sudden, what? Like, it goes to a review committee? I don't understand.
Yeah.
It feels really hypocritical. Never forget when some parents who found the initial version of this sort of law, version 1.0, to be hypocritical, got the Bible banned from the Davis County school system. For what it's worth, the Bible's back in Davis County school libraries at this point. But play stupid games, win stupid prizes. That feels like the path we're on.
Right, right. Well, and this is, you know, this is a real issue right here in Salt Lake. Granite School District, which is in Salt Lake County, is preemptively pulling books off shelves for review to be in accordance with the new law's standards. And I don't know. I just think that schools are places of learning. And, you know, there was a quote, I think, from Ken Ivory that if kids want to read these books, they can go buy them. They can go to Barnes & Noble and buy them. And that's like, I don't know. Let's be real, Ken. Like, if that's the path we're going down, then only certain people will have access to this information.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's also just unfortunate because this creates more work for teachers. Like, everything that we've talked about today is just more work for teachers. And I mean, I feel like the Utah legislature, they love to talk about teachers like they're these incredible, wonderful, like, put an apple on their desk. Oh my gosh, we're so lucky. But they regulate these classrooms like teachers are Goldman Sachs employees and not practically volunteers. Like, all my friends who are teachers, whenever they describe their day to me and what they got paid for it, I'm like, okay, so this is a volunteer role position, is what you're saying. Like,
It's
so crazy. I do want to ask you before we move on from this, Emily, like, do you remember reading any books when you were at any age that felt naughty or like explored themes you wouldn't have talked about with your parents? Like, were there any kind of like formative texts that almost certainly will end up being banned, but were like formative for you?
Do you know what keeps coming to mind is, who is it? Judy Blume, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Which is like a classic about adolescence and it's that sort of thing. It's so mild, right? It's so mild, but it explores topics that I wouldn't have been comfortable talking to my parents about.
Right.
So maybe you have one that's that pushes the boundaries a little bit more, but even something as simple as that, you know, I don't know, I worry about.
Yeah, for sure. What I remember circulating widely when I was in middle school was Gossip Girl. And I think that's kind of funny because when I look at these books that are like on this banning list, there are a lot of modern classics and there are a lot of classic classics. But like what we were passing around and being like, can you believe it? Like they had sex was Gossip Girl, which is available on televisions. It's been remade twice now as like a serialized TV show. It's super, super accessible. I don't see it on these lists, right? Like, I don't know. There's a sense of irony there for me where it's like, is Ken Ivory worried about Gossip Girl or is he more worried about like these kinds of things that we deem classics? Is it almost like they're offended that Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings is so heralded? But there's plenty of stuff still in the library that hasn't won literary awards and has similar themes.
This issue is just a real, and I don't feel like this is an overstatement. It's a slippery slope. Like a lot of people say that about all types of issues, but this one is, we might have no books left in the library by the time Ken Ivory is done in the legislature.
I mean, they're going to start running ads for Kindles on school campuses. Like that's...
Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's. Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. Mother's Day is on the horizon, and the good news is that you can find everything you need at Harmon's. Whether it's a little something to brighten Mom's Day or a memorable spread, here are a few ideas. For breakfast, try Harmon's house-baked cinnamon rolls with freshly squeezed orange juice and a package of fresh-cut strawberries. If you're spicing it up with Bloody Marys, don't forget that Harmon's has an olive bar with over 12 different varieties. Now, flowers are the perennial favorite, and you can order online or pop by the store last minute, shop succulents, potted plants, and elaborate arrangements. May's flower of the month is the hydrangea, very appropriate. Hydrangeas are fragrant and elegant. And if sweets are in order, Harmon's has added raspberry to their selection of brownie flavors. Find all mom's favorites at your local Harmon's or order online at harmonsgrocery.com.
Let's do pick of the week and get out of here. What's on your agenda?
Okay, Allie, here's my pick. A couple of months back, you might remember, we talked about this story from Building Salt Lake. They broke this news that a longtime resident of the 15th and 15th neighborhood, Carolyn Turkanis, had been throwing these parties in her backyard for decades. And a neighbor complained about them, complained about the parking and the noise issues. And so Salt Lake City said, "No, Carolyn, you may throw no more parties."
Mm-hmm.
But the city has changed its mind, and now... And now Carolyn can throw parties in her backyard again.
But they have to, like, what, be less frequent, and she can't publicly advertise them, right?
Yes, that's true. So Carolyn has to comply with a couple of tweaks. She needs to limit the guest list to name only, so she can't just post on Facebook that she's having a party. She needs to hold them less frequently because she was doing them every Saturday during the summer. And she needs to set out a tip jar for musicians instead of explicitly suggesting that you donate to the musicians. So
she needs a permit from the DABS. She needs a police presence. She needs valet parking and bike parking.
Yeah. Certain number of porta potties. Yeah.
Right.
But the point is that the neighborhood has prevailed, and the show will go on. And I really hope that the neighbor who complained is at the top of the guest list.
Yeah. Man. I mean, these things are so nuanced and so finicky. What's true is that we've got to figure out accessible, fun, easy, affordable ways for people to gather at any age, because it's critical to our happiness that we can find connection. And, like, we've got to figure out how to respect neighborhood vibes while doing it. But that's a funny. I can't tell if I think that's a win. Part of me is, like, kind of disgruntled by the fact that, like, Eastsiders just, like, kind of always get their way when they sound the alarm about something. But then part of me is really happy because, I don't know, it's cute.
We should show up the exact same way for any other neighborhood in our city.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What's your pick, Allie?
Okay, well, the sun is supposed to come back on Monday. It looks like we've got a rainy weekend ahead. But next week, things are looking sunny. Hey. And it's hiking season. It's also desert season. And my pick of the week is rattlesnake training your dog, which, to be clear, is something I need to do. So I have been researching it, which is why I made it my pick of the week.
Wonderful.
I have to give a shout out to Dog Friendly SLC, which is a blog and an Instagram page that does a really great job assembling resources for dog owners in this valley. And what Dog Friendly SLC has to say, based on their research, is that most dogs would survive being struck by a rattlesnake. Like, you obviously That's need to get news. Them to an emergency vet. They need anti-venom ASAP. You don't want to go into their heart, et cetera, et cetera. It's a nightmare scenario, but like, most dogs will survive. But I think that your dog messing with a rattlesnake can also put you in danger. And yeah. I don't like that. So these rattlesnake trainings, which I'd never heard of before recently, are where your dog actually gets like exposure to a live rattlesnake. Some of them have been defanged and some of them haven't.
What?
To get a sense of how they sound, how they smell, what they look like, and learn to be afraid of them. And so there's two that I could find nearby. One is Rattlesnake Alert. I will link their website in the show notes. They do trainings for anywhere from 2 to 6 dogs. They're not cheap. Like, these things are not cheap. It's $200 a dog.
Whoa.
They're based in Mill Creek. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is Utah Rattlesnake Avoidance. That's $175 a dog. They're based in Murray. So, I mean, it's a personal decision. But if you're out a lot, like if you're hiking 3 times a week, I have seen a lot of rattlesnakes in these foothills.
Yep.
And
yep.
gotten lucky. And eventually, I feel like luck is just not a good strategy.
Yeah. So consider this an investment in your yeah. dog. You know what, Allie? I need rattlesnake training. I got to be honest. I have no idea what to do if I encounter a rattlesnake on the trail, which is why I don't go outside. No. I'm so scared. I literally don't know what to do. So.
Yeah. I don't like them at all. I find them really frightening. I'm not. Snakes scare me. The way they move, I'm no match for that. I can't move like that.
We need to. This is a lesson to respect nature, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Watch your feet. Okay. Well, Emily, have a great, probably rainy weekend. This is great for you. You'll get to do all your favorite indoor things. No pressure.
Thanks, Allie. I certainly won't be encountering any rattlesnakes this weekend.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Hey, if you like this show, if it's full of good information, if you enjoy listening, I am asking you to become a founding CityCast member. You can do that at membership.citycast.fm. We've got perks for you. We've got ad-free listening. But most of all, you're going to be sustaining this show and our newsletter, and that's what counts. Our executive producer is Emily Means. Our producers are Ivana Martinez and Elizabeth Kama. Our newsletter editor is Therina Ria, and our host is me, Ali Vallarta. Music is by the local band Mitochondria, with additional music from All the Kimonos. We will be back Monday morning with more from around this city. Have a great weekend.